Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Thanks for returning. In this episode, I'm going to continue working with the concept of eye contact. I will present a summary of how eye contact showed up in the research project I did, as well as give you a couple other interesting studies on eye contact and eye movement in horses that helps us illuminate the human behaviors of eye contact and again underscore their importance to mental health. As you may remember from earlier episodes, I did a research project about how children respond to a therapy dog entering session. My dog, Maddie, was a therapy dog, and she and I joined 4 sessions of therapy with children and their therapists at a nonprofit agency. The design of the study was based in part on the strain situation, which I explained in detail in episode number 3. As part of the data analysis, I identified 15 behaviors and scored for them, and sustained eye contact was one of the behaviors. I define that as the child looking at Maddie for 3 seconds or longer. Of the 9 participants, there were varying degrees of this. Some of the children did look Maddie in the eye a lot, and one in particular was keenly interested in what Maddie was looking at, so he would get close to her to assess where her gaze was falling. There is a lot more to be learned about this behavior, and I only scored for it in one direction, from the child toward the therapy dog, Maddie. One thing that was striking, though, was how often the children made eye contact with their therapists when Maddie and I joined the room. And I think about this in terms of the strange situation, because Maddie and I were strangers, and this was an intact relationship between a child and their therapist. We joined 4 sessions of a continued treatment, so there wasn't a specific time if we joined, you know, in the first couple of sessions or after the pair had been meeting for many weeks. So it's hard to say specifically how this could work, but to me, the fact that when we entered the room, many of the children mirrored the behaviors of their therapist as they first met Maddie, and one in particular was seen in making almost identical body movements to her therapist as they both approached and kind of greeted Maddie for the first time. Another participant can be seen looking directly at his therapist multiple times to make eye contact with her when Maddie first arrives. In the strange situation by Ainsworth and all, studied the way, as you may remember, an infant behaves in response to the introduction of a stranger to a caregiver and child. And essentially, what seems to be happening is this idea of the occipital lobe that we talked about before, where the child is seeking information from either their caregiver in a strained situation or their therapist in my study to understand how they should respond to a novelty, in this case, myself and Maddie joining session. And this is one of the many ways animal-assisted therapy can be diagnostic and not just supportive. In other words, watching how the child is attached to their therapist, is able to attach to their therapist and seek support from their therapist are indicative of the child's ability to make relationships and sustain relationships. So that's why I've mentioned in the past that my study, I believe, opens up a lot of avenues for future research in this area. So as I mentioned in an earlier episode, sometimes when things are difficult to understand for me, I tend to look across species to see how they are working and what can be gleaned from our communication across species that helps illuminate how so much of what we think we're communicating with other humans is influenced by a tremendous amount of nonverbal and non-conscious movements and behaviors and other things. So one article that is fascinating to me that helped me think about the concept of eye contact and gazing in general is done by a group out of the UK, and the authors are Smith, Proops, Grounds, Wathen, and McComb. And they did a study to look at the physiological and behavioral responses in horses when presented with either a happy face or an angry face. So the setup is pretty interesting. They have the horses being held by their handler, which is like a word for a horse caregiver. And then they put these pictures in front of the horses, and there were two different models did according to the facial action coding system, which I'll talk about in a second. These two models took a picture with a happy face and an angry face. And these pictures are presented to the horses, and I'll kind of jump to the conclusions. And essentially what they found is that with the happy face pictures, the horses didn't have a consistent response. But across the 28 horses that were part of this study, there was a statistically significant response to the angry face, and that was a leftward gaze as well as an increase in their heart rate. And we're learning a lot about the polyvagal theory and other ways that emotions from that brain face heart circuit that I mentioned by Stephen Porges, we're learning about how that gets displayed behaviorally and how internally there are responses when we're under stress. And so essentially, the heart rate acceleration is considered to be a stress reaction, and a leftward gaze is indicative of stimulation to the right brain. It's visible behaviorally on the left side. So there's a lot more to say about that, but just for purposes of this, it's presumed that when the horses are making a leftward gaze, they are processing the emotions from the facial picture in their right hemisphere, which we think is where emotions are processed. So when you see someone gazing to the left, it can be that they are processing emotions in the right hemisphere, and that's what they perceive is happening here with these horses when they're presented with this angry face picture, which I hope you will agree is super fascinating. One, the setup of the design is pretty impressive to me because it's pretty clear, you know, what's happening. And likewise, it's something that happens quite a bit. You know, people walk up to horses and most, you know, some people are terrified of them. Some people are enamored with them. There's a wide range of responses. And what this is showing that, you know, despite how you might feel toward the horse, they are able to read facial cues from humans. So even that's fascinating to me that it goes interspecies. And so this facial action coding system was created by Dr. Paul Ekman, a psychologist who studies human emotion and nonverbal communication. And What he's done a lot with is the idea of micro expressions. And that is a way that he's got this really elaborate coding system across the whole face that can be demonstrative of internal emotions. So some ones to think about are, you say for an angry person, you would typically see some of the teeth flaring kind of in an aggressive way, and also some like furrowed brows. And among many things, those are a couple ways that you would see someone display an angry face. So the models that they used for these pictures kind of went along Dr. Ekman's facial coding system to accurately display, you know, a human quote, quote, happy face or one that looked angry to these horses. As a side note here, Dr. Ekman's work is pretty interesting and more popular than you might realize. He actually was a consultant for Disney Pixar's movie Inside Out because he's very good at helping illustrators and psychologists and investigators and other people understand the nonverbal ways that we express emotions. As always, we'll have information about all these things on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, as well as some links in the show notes for this episode. Okay, and the last study that I'm going to present in this podcast episode is by Mott, Hawthorne, and McBride. And the title of it explains what we're up to here. It is Blink Rate as a Measure of Stress and Attention in the Domestic Horse. So again, I'm just going to kind of summarize this. What they did is they did some clipping of the horse. So as many times as you see a gorgeous horse with their hair looking very polished, you can be assured that there has been an experience where their handlers have had to get them accustomed to the fact that humans like to use clippers on their face. And so as pretty as they look, there's typically some stressful training that has occurred to get to that point. Because typically the clippers are your standard variety noisemaker. They make a lot of movements and horses just have a hard time understanding why humans want to put them up around their face. And so the researchers in this case took that experience to determine if there was another way we could look at stress levels in the horse. So they set up this study where the horses had a hair clipper up to their face, which the handlers knew, you know, produces some moderate stress in the horse. And then they took cortisol samples and measurements for heart rate and heart rate variability, as well as had a camera on the horse's eyes and could count for blink rate. So it's pretty well documented that cortisol levels, when they increase, are indicative of increased stress, and some heart rate and heart rate variability measurements can indicate stress. But those are hard to measure, even though wearable devices are becoming more popular, even with horses, they're still difficult to measure. And so what this study did is they sought to determine if the way the horse blinks and the amount at which they blink correlates with cortisol and with heart rate and heart rate variability. And what they found is that it does. And this means, in short, they determined that there's a correlation demonstrating that when the traditional indicators of stress with cortisol and heart rate variability indicated stress, that blink rate correlated with that. And so with some caution, we can start to think that when we see our horses increase their blinking, then we can guess that their stress might be increasing as a result. And this is true for humans too. I think if we consider that occipital lobe exercise, as a reminder, the occipital lobe is the upper half of the eye socket. You've probably been looking around at those lately since you've maybe heard the earlier podcasts on them. And maybe you've noticed that a lot of times when people start speaking quickly or doing other things that might indicate stress, that their blink rate also increases. And so that is what this study found in horses, and it does, at least anecdotally for me, translate to humans. All right, so now we've had an entire episode, in fact, a few episodes about eye contact, and this one about research on, additionally, on gazes and blink rates in horses. So how does this relate to doing psychotherapy well? I think what it's going to lead us to is an ability to determine when is the best chance our interventions have of being effective. Because what we need to know is that someone feels safe enough to make eye contact with us. They're kind of resourcing us in stressful situations. And by that, I mean checking in with us for support via that occipital lobe. And now we're seeing in the horses that when they feel like someone's angry, we're getting a left gaze. So there's a lot of emotional processing happening in the right hemisphere, and where it's shown through a left gaze. And then when horses are stressed, we're seeing an increase in blink rate. So what I'm going to suggest in the next episode are some ways that I've come up with, and others too. I haven't seen official studies on it yet, but in practice, I think we can start to get really conscious about our assessment of someone's eye contact and associated movements as an indicator of when is the best time to make an intervention. You know, you'll hear many therapists talk about how they don't feel their interventions landed, or somehow they weren't connecting with their patients on a particular intervention. And what I'm going to suggest in the next episode is ways you can identify when is the right time to do that based on how the eye contact between you and your patient is demonstrating a relationship that will enable that intervention to be most successful. In other words, the relationship is strong enough that they're resourcing you for support, and that they are in a spot where they are not overly stimulated by what they might interpret as like difficult or angry emotions, and they're not overly stressed. So that's why I really appreciate you listening to this episode, and that's why I've presented this research. So now that we can take it and look at it in terms of how to apply it clinically. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time. Somewhere between 20 and 60% of mental health professionals endorse feeling burned out in our field. This is from a study published by the National Institutes of Health. The reason the range is so wide is because it's difficult to determine what it means to be burned out. But when you feel it, you know it. If this is happening to you and you'd like to join a community of supportive colleagues, then please consider joining our Connection Community. In it, we're going to follow up on the topics presented here in the podcast, and we're going to talk about how they can apply to your work. My impression is that to sustain in the field of mental health, it's important to feel like what we're doing has an impact and that we're not alone in it. And that's my intent with the Connection Community, and I hope you'll consider joining us. You can find more information on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, or by emailing us at member@connectiontherapypodcast.com for more information. Thanks.